Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Welcome back, you horny little rats. It's time to smut up and listen.
Just a reminder for today's episode and all future episodes, our opinions are subjective. We don't advocate for kink shaming or author shaming. This is all in good, smutty fun. Enjoy! And don't forget to check out patreon.com/smutupandlisten to hear Riley and I do blind reactions every Tuesday to Reddit erotica.
Yeah, do it.
Do it. $3 a month.
Feed our family. You can cut that out.
Nope.
Today's episode trigger warnings are explicit sexual content, BDSM, murder, gangs.
Oh, gangs.
That might be a trigger.
Yeah, I am triggered. And I have a Spotify comment, and this comes from Regan Montgomery, and it says, greetings from Melbourne, Australia. Just kidding, it doesn't say that, but she is from Australia. And it says, as I'm listening to this episode, I'm waiting in line for a dark romance indie book convention. Ladies, I love your podcast. Every time I'm driving or by myself with no kids, you're my go-to listen. Keep up the awesome smuttiness. You're doing a public service. Stay horny.
Cute.
Thank
a public
you.
Service. Thank you.
Yeah.
Throw some shrimps on the Barbie for us. And this episode, we are telling Riley all about Salem, which is book one in the Fallen Ravens Motorcycle Club series by Crystal Daniels and Sandy Alvarez. And stay tuned to the end of the episode if you want to hear our ratings.
Yeah.
The book opens up with our male main character, Salem, and that's not his real name. That's his motorcycle name.
Oh, rare.
And he is currently carrying out a hit on a target. The man he's been hired to kill is a scumbag murderer, and the man who hired Salem is the victim's father, and he wants revenge for his daughter's death. Salem tells the man that he'll make this death slow and painful, as the man requested, but to know that this man's blood will be on his hands since he's the one who ordered his death. The perp's name is Eddie Hollister, and he goes by the street name Skunk.
Tough.
That is tough.
Yeah.
Salem and his men track him down in a shitty house in the middle of nowhere, and as soon as they walk in, they get the distinct whiff of meth. There's a bunch of men asleep on the couch, probably passed out, and they all decide that as long as the men stay unconscious, they get to live tonight. They find Eddie and bring him outside, tying him to a pole. They torture him by beating him and ripping off his fingernails.
Ugh.
I know, horrible.
Yeah, yuck.
Revealing that they're here as payback for the death of a young woman, pulling out her picture to show him. Eddie gets a dark look on his face, saying that killing her gave him such a rush, an even better high than the drugs. Then Salem pulls out his gun and shoots the man in the head, killing him instantly. The men head back to the Fallen Ravens clubhouse to have some drinks, and it's built on top of an old cemetery and is complete with an ancient stone church. So it sounds very fun.
Yeah, it's pretty spooky.
Yeah, dark.
This book does take place in Salem, Massachusetts also, so he lives in Salem and he is Salem.
Very witchy.
Salem excuses himself to smoke a little weed by himself with the company of the local stray cat Nimbus. As he sits looking at one of the headstones, he thinks back on his old club president who was murdered a few years ago by a rival MC club, the Demon Jokers. Salem had joined the Fallen Ravens after a traumatic childhood, complete with an abusive, alcoholic dad. When he was 16, he'd walked in on his dad drowning his mother in their bathtub.
Jesus.
I know. And then he avenged his mom by holding his dad's head under the water until he died right alongside her. His best friend, Mystic, had been waiting out in the car while all of this went down. They're basically brothers now, and they're both part of the Fallen Ravens. Meanwhile, our female main character, Sage, has just moved to Salem, Massachusetts with her best friend, Juniper, to open their hair salon, Dyed to Perfection.
Cute. Also, Juniper, cute name.
Both that and Sage, I think, are very cute.
Mm-hmm.
Very cute. And I think last episode, you guessed that she was a business owner, but you guessed that her business was like a thrift store or like a junk store. But it's a hair salon.
Okay, close, kind of, maybe.
Sage and Juniper have been best friends since the third grade when Juniper stood up to a mean girl who was bullying Sage about her weight and looks, and they've been inseparable ever since. Their mothers both worked, teaching at the same college, and they're best friends too. So the moms are best friends and the girls are best friends.
Ew,
it's very cute.
That is cute. I love that.
Both Sage and Juniper grew up to be bombshells and went to cosmetology school together, and then they saved up enough money to open their very own salon. Currently, they're checking out the neighborhood where they're going to be opening up shop when they stumble across an apothecary-type store called Belladonna's. When they walk in, they introduce themselves to the owner, who is about their age, and we learn her name is Suki.
Okay.
I just thought of Suki Stackhouse.
Who's that?
True Blood. Hello.
Oh, I'm thinking of Suki Waterhouse, Robert Pattinson's wife.
Oh, that too.
Ugh, they're so cute. Love it.
And Suki is a bit of an outcast in town. They check out her products and everything is organic and made by Suki herself. So they buy a little bit of everything and tell her that they'd love to form some sort of a partnership with the salon since she has so many amazing hair products, and Suki is thrilled. And mostly it seems like she's just glad somebody's being nice to her for a change because she's fully bullied in town.
Yeah, it's really sad.
That is sad. It's weird to me when adults bully adults.
I know, grow up.
For real.
As they're walking out of the store, a group of motorcycles drives by loudly down the street, and Sage is like, damn, who are they? And Suki tells the girls that those are the Ravens. They're a motorcycle club, and everyone in town is too scared of them to associate. There's a ton of rumors about them, but nobody knows for sure if they're true or not. Sage and Juniper head to their apartment and have some wine and pizza, and then Sage's dad calls to check in on her. And if I remember correctly, the apartment is above their salon.
Yeah.
Cute. Love that.
They're living the dream.
Honestly. They really are.
Sage tells her dad that the salon is almost ready for the grand opening, and he tells her how much he misses her, and he'll make plans for him and her mom to come out to visit in a few weeks. They exchange I love yous and they hang up. Salem wakes up in the middle of the night and reaches over to grab a warm glass of whiskey from his nightstand, and he takes a little swig of it, which is absolutely fucking disgusting.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know how you would do that. No.
No.
He hops in the shower knowing he won't be falling back asleep, and he feels like something really bad is headed to town. He looks at the waves crashing onto the shore, and then we learn that his house is a converted lighthouse. So he got a lighthouse and is converting it into his home.
It's cool. What a weird shaped home. I mean, like, cool, yes.
Well, he doesn't live in the top of it.
I know, but isn't it still skinny? It's like each level is like, I don't know, actually.
I think lighthouses are pretty big.
Are they? Maybe they're quite wide at the bottom.
Yeah.
I think they get pointy at the top.
Like a penis.
Right.
Like that.
So he's got to come back here somewhere.
So as he's looking out at the waves, he's thinking about the last words his club president, Chicago, told him before he died. It's not over. It's only just begun. And he wonders what's about to happen. So he's feeling very ominous.
Yeah. It's like a Lifetime movie.
He gets dressed, and as he's drinking his coffee, Mystic calls him, telling him that their liquor shipment has been delayed yet again. So Salem tells him that he'll take care of it and heads to the club to meet up with him because they have 3 auditions in 2 hours. He makes a pit stop at the liquor store and speaks with Chicago's brother, Bishop, about getting some whiskey to the club since their shipment keeps falling through. And Bishop's like, yeah, sure, you got it. They chit-chat a little bit as they load up some of the liquor into Salem's charger, and Bishop tells him that word on the street is a group of suspicious-looking men have been going around town asking about Salem, and they used his government name, Ash Crawford.
Oh, shit.
Salem thanks him for the heads up, and he's now on high alert. Then he heads to the Fallen, the gentleman's club the motorcycle club owns, to see about these new dancers who are auditioning. He and some of the men, along with a woman named Astrid, pull up chairs, and the newbies get to dancing for them. The first one is a woman named Harlow, who does well and has great stage presence. The next girl is named Bellamy, who seems sweet, but she's way too nervous, so they offer her a job at a friend's bar instead. The last is Arabella, and she goes by Honey Holiday, and she's a natural. She does straight-up acrobatics, and she is hired immediately.
I'm sorry about all of their names. Bellamy, Arabella, Harlow. Okay.
Honey Holiday, though? What a great stripper name. Before Juno leaves to go to his tattooing gig, Salem pulls him aside and fills him in on the information he got from Bishop earlier, and Juno tells him that he'll keep an eye out for anything shady. Meanwhile, Died to Perfection is officially open. As soon as they flip the sign, two older women walk in telling Sage and Juniper that one of their daughters is getting married tonight and their stylist fell through. They ask if there's any way the girls can fit in 8 women today. They say, of course, and the women are super grateful and call the bride immediately. All 8 of them fill the salon, and 8 hours later, everyone is happy with the work, and the girls are absolutely exhausted but super proud of their successful first day. One of the women even booked them for a few months from now. So that sounds like just an amazing grand opening for them.
That does. I don't think it could have gone better.
A whole bridal party? Yeah. No.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Literally as soon as they flip the sign.
Yeah.
Instead of going home and resting, Sage suggests that they go out to celebrate. She wants to go to a club to dance and have a drink. Juniper's like, fine, but if we wind up someplace super grimy, we're finding a regular bar and hanging out there instead. They head home to get ready, and of course, Sage turns out looking gorgeous with a low-cut red dress and red lipstick. They call an Uber, and when they hop in the car, they're like, hey, so we're new to town. Do you know of any clubs? Somewhere we can go and get a drink and dance. And the guy hesitates and is like, yeah, I guess there's one place, but... And Juniper cuts him off and is like, great, drive us there. She's very straightforward. She, like, has no time for men and their bullshit.
Yeah, I wonder if he's going to take him to the strip club.
They wind up being dropped off at the Fallen, the motorcycle club's gentleman's club. And as soon as they walk in, they realize that this is fully a strip club, but they decide to stay and try and make the best of it. And maybe it'll be fun. They sit at the bar and admire the dancers. And Sage is like, damn, I wish I could dance like that. The absolutely gorgeous bombshell of a bartender looks her up and down and is like, with a body like that, you totally could. And both Sage and Juniper are flustered by catching this beautiful woman's attention. And they're both straight, as far as I know, but this woman is so beautiful that even the two straight women are like, oh my God.
They have their gay awakening.
I 100% get that.
They introduce themselves and she tells them that her name is Aspen. Very nature heavy names in this book.
Yeah.
Juniper, Aspen, Sage.
Shit, yeah. I wonder if this is like a plant mama writing this book, you know?
Plant mama.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. They order their drinks and gush over being complimented by a total hottie. And then Sage excuses herself to the bathroom and asks Juniper to watch her drink while she's gone. On her way, she spots a group of men in leather vests and she realizes they're the men from the motorcycle club that Suki warned her about. One of the men in particular eyes her up and down, but keeps on walking past her. When she's done in the potty, she heads back to the bar and finds an attractive guy basically begging Juniper to have a drink with him. And Juniper's like, no, I'm here with my friend. Thanks, though. And the guy is pushing it, saying that her friend won't mind. And Juniper's like, she may not, but I do. Don't assume that I prefer your boring ass company over my best friend. And then she gives the guy her back. Now, this dude looks pissed and he storms away. Sage sits down and tells Juniper how much she loves her, and Juniper gives her a hug and a kiss on the cheek. They start watching the dancers again when someone catches Sage's eye. It's the guy she saw on the way to the bathroom, and he's hot as hell, and she can't look away. He's currently getting a lap dance, and she's tingling just watching. Of course, this man is Salem. And Mystic is sitting next to him while he gets his little dancey dance and points out the woman that's totally checking him out at the bar. He looks over to her and takes note about how sexy and curvy she is, but she does look a little innocent to be in a place like this. They lock eyes as Astrid continues the lap dance, dropping down to the floor between his knees, and Salem is thinking about what the mystery woman's red lips would look like around his dick. The eye contact is intense, and he wants to see just how far he can take this, so he tells Astrid to take his cock out.
Astrid undoes my jeans and begins freeing my cock, and just like that, my mystery woman tears her eyes away, shattering the connection between us. I wait for her to turn back, wanting to feel the sting of her stare again. Astrid grips my cock in her hand, giving it a firm squeeze, just how I like it. I hiss as the head of my dick is engulfed by the warmth of her mouth and close my eyes. All I see are my mystery woman's icy blues staring back at me, and suddenly she's the one on her knees. It's her red lips wrapped around my cock, sliding up and down my shaft. It's her tongue flicking against the sensitive spot just beneath the head of my dick, rubbing against the piercing I have there. In a building full of people and music playing, it's my mystery woman I fantasize about as the tension builds. The woman in red haunts my thoughts while chasing my release. Okay, poetry.
Beautiful. He tucks himself away and Astrid asks if he wants to fuck later and he tells her not tonight. She's observant though and tells Salem he should go find the woman he's been staring at. And if he changes his mind, he can always come find her. And they have a very casual, no strings attached situation. So they fuck when they're horny and there's no feelings involved.
Good for them.
He sits back and has a cigarette, but he can't stop thinking about this woman, so he's finally like, fine, and he walks up to her at the bar. But then he sees another guy sitting next to her, and he looks sketchy as hell. He hangs back and watches as this guy slips something into Sage's drink. He makes a nod to Laredo, another MC dude, and Aspen, the bartender, notices all of this is happening and alerts her coworker, Alder. Just as Sage goes to take a sip of her drink, Salem is there, and he grabs the dude by the hair and smashes his face into the bar with one hand and uses his other hand to cover Sage's drink so she doesn't get drugged. The man is demanding to know what the fuck is going on, and Sage is like, hey, that's my drink, asshole.
Never leave your drink unattended, I growl. My mystery woman raises her brow. Did you just growl at me? Yeah, what was he like?
Never leave your drink unattended.
She turns to the tall blonde who has moved in to stand beside her. Did you just growl at me? The blonde thinks she looks concerned with the situation and also tries hiding a smile back. I think so, babe.
All right.
He's a growler.
He is.
He tells her this piece of shit spiked her drink. And the guy pipes up and is like, someone would have to drug me to fuck this fat bitch. And now Salem is pissed and tells him there's a special place in hell for pussies like him and pops him right in the nose.
Nice.
And I don't even think she's fat. Like, it just sounds like she's very curvy.
Yeah.
Men are gross.
Men.
They are gross.
Then a gunshot pops off and people start booking it out the doors. Salem tells Alder to bring these girls up to his office and Alder rushes them upstairs. Alder and Salem step toward the man who spiked Sage's drink when a second man comes up holding a gun and Salem takes in his vest. He's a demon joker and apparently his name is Choke.
Okay.
Salem whips out his gun and puts a bullet in the bar guy's head and a second one right in Choke's chest. Two more demon jokers step up and Salem holds a gun to one of their heads. This guy's name is Spider and he tells Spider they'd better get their trash out of his club and when they get home to tell their president this will be their one and only warning. When the demon jokers are gone, he heads to his office where Sage and Juniper are rightfully freaking out saying they're calling the cops and they don't know that there was fully a double homicide downstairs. They just heard the guns, saw everyone leaving and they're like, we're calling the cops.
Yeah, I cannot get over the demon joker name. I'm so sorry.
It's a bad name.
It is, but they're bad guys.
They are bad guys.
Yeah. Yep, yep, yep.
But Salem is like, no, no cops. Come on, I'm taking you home. Aspen is there and reassures them that they're safe with him. And he takes them out back down the fire escape so they don't see the carnage down by the bar. They get in the backseat of their car and he brings them back to the salon. And before Sage gets out of the car, he tells her they are never to set foot in his club again. He needs to keep her as far away from him as possible because with all of this demon joker shit going down, a distraction is the last thing he needs. By the time Sage crawls into bed, she's too amped up to sleep and she just stares at her ceiling thinking about this dangerous, tattooed, 6'5" hottie. Then she realizes that she left her purse at the club and it has her ID in it. The next morning, she's fully booked and ready for a day at the salon. Her first client is a teenage girl named Emmy, who's brought in with her older sister, Dina. Emmy automatically starts admiring Sage's cool hair. It's purple. And begs her sister for hair just like Sage's. Dina is hesitant about letting her get such a wild color, so they compromise with Sage's advice and go for a cute little ColourPop moment. By the time they leave, Dina is thanking Sage profusely. She hasn't seen her sister smile like this in ages. So they're very up and coming in the neighborhood. They're getting good reviews.
Yeah.
Probably 5 stars on Yelp.
Mm-hmm. Google review after Google review.
On the way home, Sage has to stop by the hardware store to pick up some brackets to hang up some mirrors, and she meets the owner's nephew, Brandon. He helps her find what she needs, and he's clearly interested in her. He's the classic, handsome, boy-next-door type, and normally that is Sage's type, but she can't get Salem out of her head. After she leaves, she gets a call from her dad, who's just checking in again, and she tells him she doesn't know what it is, but she has a really good feeling about this town. But why? Like, you were literally almost spiked and raped last night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But she's like, this town has good vibes.
There's something about it. I mean, after that, I'd be like, we have to leave. We have to sell the shop. We have to go pick a different town.
We're moving.
Yeah.
No, but she's like, Daddy, I have a great feeling about this place. It's very peaceful.
I was at a shooting last night.
And I almost got date raped.
Yeah. He's, of course, still worried for his little girl. So she assures him she'll be safe and she'll see him in a few weeks. And they say, I love you. And they hang up. Meanwhile, Salem cannot get this sage woman off of his mind. And he's annoyed because he really can't afford to become obsessed with something when something big is about to go down. Plus, the cops are on his trail after the gunshots were reported from the club last night. One of the guys lets him know that the town sheriff is stopping by the club to talk to him later on, and then he's alerted that the guys who were tailing the demon jokers last night found out that there's a whole group of them on their old property, and their old property is from before they got run out of town, which was the night that both of their club presidents were killed.
Damn.
So they're super rivals.
Yeah.
And it's fully a compound with security and an electric fence, and every guard they saw was armed. Later on that night, Mystic tells him that he thinks he should open a dispensary since they already have a grow facility and it's legal now. Salem decides that they should go for it to show the demon jokers that they aren't stopping their operations on account of them. And then it's time for him to meet with the sheriff. But he's not a regular sheriff. He's a cool sheriff.
Oh,
yeah.
He's off the clock and he just wants to know if there's anything he should be on the lookout for after all the shit that went down last night. Salem tells him that it seems as though the demon jokers are trying to make a comeback, and Sheriff Huxley is basically like, you deal with things your way, I'll deal with them my way, but no matter what, let's keep this town safe and stay out of each other's way. Huxley leaves and Salem sits at the bar having a drink when the door opens and none other than Sage walks in. He asks her what the fuck she's doing here, and she tells him she left her purse last night. Aspen runs to the lost and found to go check for it, and Salem starts laying into Sage about how he specifically told her to stay the fuck away from this club. And she's like, yeah, I know, I literally only came for my purse. He's angry, but he can't help admiring how sexy she is. Aspen comes back holding her purse, but before she can grab it, Salem snatches it and opens it, checking out her ID. He sees that she's from Nebraska and she's only 25 years old. And she's like, do you always rummage through things that don't belong to you, Mr. Salem? And he says, my name is Ash.
Call me by my real name.
And she's like, okay, cool. Well, now that I have this, you don't have to worry about seeing me again. So bye, I guess. And he tells her it's only for her own safety. It's nothing personal. She tells him protecting her from a would-be sexual assault and bringing her and her best friend home kind of seems personal. And also that guy from last night seems like the type to hold a grudge. So she's a little worried about the consequences of that. And he pulls her in close. He resists kissing her and tells her the guy was dealt with and he'd never let anything happened to her. And she's like, okay, I don't even know you, so you don't owe me anything. Salem swallows down the fact that he wants her bad and is just like, you're right. He offers to walk her out and she tells him not to bother, but he does it anyway, bringing her to her car and opening the door for her. As soon as she gets in, he blurts out, what if I told you I want to see you again? But before she can answer, her phone rings and she tells whoever's on the line that she's headed their way now. So he tells her he'll see her around and he shuts the door before she drives off, which is very mixed signals because he's like, stay the fuck away from me. I want to see you again.
That's what men do. Mixed signals. That's it.
Now it's Sunday and it's Sage's only day off from the salon, so she's out doing some early morning errands. She's at the grocery store when she hears chatter about a girl named Lucy Donaldson being murdered. Her body was found last night. She spots Suki also doing some shopping and gives her a wave. And the cashier is like, I see you know Suki. She's a sweet girl and it's such a shame that the people in town treat her and her mother the way that they do. And I guess her mom killed her stepdad a while back and claimed it was self-defense, but she still got 10 years in prison.
But like people are mad about that?
So the stepdad was Brock Huxley, the sheriff's son.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. When Sage gets home, Juniper is watching the news coverage about Lucy, and they decide, even though they didn't know her, they should send her family flowers to show their condolences. They also agree not to tell her dad about it since he's so overprotective of her. Then Sage tells Juniper what she learned about Suki's family, and they both agree it's bullshit for people to treat her like shit because of it, and they vow to be nice to her and clap back at anyone they hear talking shit about her.
That night, Sage is tossing and turning, thinking about all of this shit going on when she hears glass breaking. She pops out of bed and runs to the window to see two figures smashing out Suki's shop windows. I know, fuck off.
For real.
She grabs her pepper spray and runs outside and is like, hey, assholes. The guys turn around and she sees that they're young, like teenage young, and then they book it. Sage manages to tackle one of them down before he can escape and smashes his head into the pavement. They get into a full-on tussle and then she hears a familiar voice and she's pulled off of the kid. It's Salem.
What the fuck?
Surprisingly, he's on her side and he tells the punk to sit his ass on the sidewalk. He eyes up Sage, who's only wearing her tiny little jammies, and he picks her up, carrying her to her apartment door, telling her if she would stop running around doing all sorts of crazy shit, they wouldn't keep finding themselves like this. She tells him to mind his own business and he says this town is his business. She says that Suki is her friend and when some assholes come and try to fuck with her shop, that is her business. And he said, what you did was stupid and reckless, babe. And then she's like, don't call me babe.
Yeah.
He asks her, what if those were grown-ass men with weapons? Don't forget there's someone out there killing pretty young girls like you. She starts to get tears in her eyes, so he backs off and leaves her to go deal with the kid he left on the sidewalk.
What the fuck was Sage thinking? The woman's lack of personal safety is infuriating, and that sassy mouth of hers, I'd like to fill that sweet mouth full of my cock, is what I'd like to do. Do it.
He stays with the teenager, who we learn is Lucas Cromwell, until a cop shows up. And Officer Miller immediately knows that his accomplice must be his buddy Ian. Miller's like, all right, buddy, let's head down to the station. But Salem knows this kid is young and has had a rough life at home. So he's like, no, wait, let me have him for a few days. Ian, too. I'll put him to work and keep them out of trouble. Miller's like, okay, fine, but if Suki wants to press charges, that's out of my hands. And Salem agrees and tells Lucas to be at the club's tattoo shop at 11 a.m. sharp tomorrow. Ian, too. So bring your little fucking friend.
How many fucking shops and things do they have?
They run that town.
Gotta make their money.
Business owners.
Miller brings Lucas home, and Salem knocks on Sage's door to check on her since she was so upset when she went upstairs. She tells him she really doesn't appreciate men who criticize her lack of judgment, and he says he won't apologize for what he said, but he is sorry that he was harsh about it and hurt her feelings. She relaxes a little bit and says she's fine. She did scratch up her thigh tackling Lucas, though, so he bends down to check it out.
Salem, I'm fine. She goes to move away, but her back hits the apartment door. I lean forward, press my lips against the abrasion, and feel her skin prickle. I'm so close to her pussy, I smell her arousal, and a hungry growl forms deep in my chest. Ash, I want you to call me Ash. Ash, she repeats my name, and it's like an electric current straight to my cock. I'd be like, don't kiss my wound.
Also, stop growling.
Yeah, what the fuck?
He tells her he won't touch her unless she asks, and she finally says, touch me, Ash. He stands up, backing her against the apartment door, and runs his fingers over her nipples through her thin top and kisses her neck. Then his hands travel down until he slips them under the waistband of her sleep shorts, and he finds her hella soaked. He fingers her while rubbing her clit, and she's moaning his name until she comes. She goes to fumble with the button of his jeans, but he says no. He's fantasized about having her mouth on his dick, but when he has her for the first time, it'll be in his bed. He gives her a kiss and tells her to get back inside. He gets a solid 2 hours of sleep that night and heads to the tattoo shop to get ready for Lucas and Ian. And when they show up, he tells them they will be apologizing to Suki, and he brings them to the shop to clean up the mess that they made. Sage is there talking to Suki and is shocked to see him. And Suki is just shocked that Salem even knows who she is. He tells Suki that the boys have something they'd like to say, and Lucas is like, I'm sorry we vandalized your store. And Ian's like, yeah, sorry for breaking your shit. But it's clear that Ian doesn't mean it at all.
Ian.
She tells them it's no big deal, and Salem pipes up and is like, no, it is a big deal. You don't have to accept these apologies, and you don't need to let anybody walk all over you. Then he orders the boys to get to work cleaning up their mess. Sage invites Suki to breakfast with her and Juniper while this gets taken care of. She's clearly stoked, not used to being invited out, and runs to grab her things. Sage thanks Salem for doing this, and he gives her a big old smooch, not caring who sees them. When they get to the diner, Suki assumes they only invited her so they could ask her about her mom, and Sage says, no, we invited you because we want to be your friend. We don't care what people say about you. And Juniper's like, yeah, whoever talks about you can suck my asshole.
Oh, yeah.
Suki is shocked and touched, and they all have a lovely meal together.
Hey, guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
The next day, Sage is at home working on the salon website when there's a knock at her door, and it's her parents. They wanted to surprise the girls.
Would that be a pleasant surprise for you?
For me personally, no. But she really likes her parents. They vibe.
I'd be like, no.
Her parents offer to book a hotel since they didn't give them a heads up. But Juniper and Sage are like, no, you can stay with us. Her mom makes everyone breakfast, and then Sage and her dad head to the liquor store to get some drinks for everyone when they run into none other than Salem. She says hi to him and immediately turns beet red, and her dad is like, you're breathing funny and you're super red. Are you okay? And she's like, I'm totally fine. And he's like, okay, well, who's your friend? She does awkward introductions and the men shake hands. Her dad asks how they know each other, and Sage is like, you know, just from around town. I wouldn't say we, like, know each other. And Salem is like, I don't know, babe. I think we know each other pretty well.
Oh, my goodness.
Sage says, okay, well, on that note, we are heading out, so goodbye. But her dad turns to Salem and invites him to dinner tonight at the apartment since he's cooking Sage's favorite chicken fried steak. Which would absolutely piss me the fuck off. Who are you to invite people to my house?
Yeah, for real.
You show up unannounced and then you invite people over. Dead to me.
Go back to Nebraska.
Yeah, I wouldn't be able to be like kind at all. I'd be such a bitch the whole time. I'd be so rude.
And also it's a little odd because I believe Salem is closer to her dad's age.
Yeah, Salem's like in his 40s.
Yeah, and I'm sure her dad's not stupid. I'm sure he knows something's going on.
Mm-hmm. Of course, Salem says he'll be there, and then he winks at her. They leave and go pick up her mom, and her dad fills her in on what just happened, how his little shortcake has a man friend coming to dinner tonight. So her mom's like, Sage, I didn't know you had a man friend. Let's go to the store so I can make special dessert. But when they get to the store, Salem is walking out, and Sage thinks she can hear her mother audibly whimper when she sees Salem.
Oh, Mom.
She's like, oh, God, who's that man?
Get it together.
Her dad waves enthusiastically at him and is like, that's him. And her mom is like, damn, Sage, he's hot, which would make me die. I would have died 3 times already since this visit started.
100%.
6 o'clock rolls around and Salem is punctual as ever. Sage is dying from embarrassment and Juniper is simply tickled to watch all of this go down. She lets him inside, begging him to be on his best behavior. He gives her dad wine and a bottle of scotch that he brought with him, and Sage reminds her dad that he can't have any scotch. He's on a special diet ever since his heart attack and he can only have light beer. But her mom walks out and is like, well, one drink with Sage's handsome friend wouldn't hurt. She introduces herself as Mary and turns to Sage, whispering in her ear that this guy's smile is a total panty dropper. And Sage is mortified.
Yeah.
Juniper stands up and formally introduces herself as well and tells him she's the best friend that will chop off his balls if he hurts Sage. And he just gives her a salute and says, understood. At dinner, her parents give him the classic grilling, and he tells them that he is 40. He met Sage at a club that he owns. And her dad's like, oh, a business owner. I like that. What kind of club is it? And he's like, oh, it's a strip club. Very nonchalant.
Oh, God.
Mary looks at his vest and is like, oh, so you're in a motorcycle club then? And he says, yep, my road name is Salem, and I'm the president of the Fallen Ravens. He tells them how he lives in a converted lighthouse and his parents are dead. And then it gets awkward and silent, so her dad breaks it by saying, it's time for a drink. The men have some quality bro time out on the steps with their scotch, and Salem smokes a cigarette. Charles, Sage's dad, gives him the don't hurt my daughter speech, and Salem assures him that Sage is safe with him. Then they go check out his motorcycle. Sage walks out to tell them dessert is ready, but Charles asks if she's been on his motorcycle yet, and she says no, and he's like, Salem, take my daughter for a ride.
No dad would ever say that.
Get on this old man's motorcycle. Go on, get.
Where's your life?
She's, of course, mortified again, but she ultimately is cornered into doing it, and Charles heads inside to give them some alone time. As soon as they're alone, he gives her a smooch and tells her to hop on. He promises he can go slow. When she's loaded up behind him, he can feel her titties smushed against his back, and he loves it. They take off, and it's not long before she's laughing and telling him to drive faster. They cruise all the way to his lighthouse. They head inside, and he gives her the grand tour, and she is surprised at how cozy it is. They go to the deck of the tower and watch the sunset over the water. It's very romantic, and then they head inside for a drink. She tells him he's not really what she expected, and he tells her he's just as much of an asshole as she assumes, and asks if he frightens her, and she says, yeah, a little bit. But he also excites her, and he picks her up, carrying her to the bedroom. She strips off her top and bra, and he tells her how perfect she is. Then he leans down to unbutton her jeans, and she tells him she needs him. When she's completely naked, he tells her that her pussy is perfect and starts to go down on her, and it's not long before she comes.
Kneading inside her pussy, I stand, undo my jeans, and free my cock. Sage recovers enough to look at me. I stroke myself while she stares. A woman has never turned me on as much as Sage does. She crawls backward, positioning herself in the center of the bed, then reaches between her thighs and plays with her clit. It takes all my control not to nut when she dips her fingers into her pussy. I climb onto the bed and settle between her legs, the head of my cock pressing against her entrance. We lock eyes. Fuck me. I sink into her slick pussy as she brays my name.
This isn't fucking. This is lovemaking, and he's instructing her to rub her clit as he thrusts into her.
You're mine, Sage. I groan. Sage's lips leave mine, only to declare, yours, Ash. Her pussy tightens around my dick, and her body shudders beneath mine. Fuck yes. I growl, and I continue working my cock in and out, riding the waves of her release. Love how greedy your pussy is, Ash. Sage breathes against my mouth. Her nails digging into my flesh, marking me, are my undoing. With one final thrust, I sink into the sweetest pussy I've ever had and come.
Sage doesn't get home until 5 a.m. and has to do the walk of shame as her dad is already up and drinking his coffee. He just laughs and hands her a mug, and he's like, don't be embarrassed, it's not like I didn't know that you have sex, and she fully chokes.
Ew, stop that.
And he's like, what? It's perfectly natural. And besides, your mother and I. And she cuts him off and is like, nope, I do not want to hear you finish that thought. And he's like, fine. But I do want to say, I do like this Ash guy. I can just tell he'd do just about anything for you. Which, like, how do you know that? He owns a strip club and he's 40.
Yeah, as a parent.
He's a cool dad.
Yeah, he's like, wow, I love him. Love him. Love that he's in a motorcycle gang. Love that he owns a strip club. Love that he's way older than you. Yes, yes, yes.
They talk about how overprotective her dad is, and I'm like, where?
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
Finally, it's Monday, and Sage is super bummed to see her parents headed back home. She's also bummed because Salem hasn't reached out to her since they had sex. But she tells Juniper it's fine. It is what it is, and if Ash has forgotten about her already, she fully intends to forget about him. Later that afternoon, she's at the salon with Brandon, the guy from the hardware store, hanging up mirrors. He's super nice, and they have a good time, and then he asks her to have dinner with him sometime. As soon as the words are out of Brandon's mouth, there's a growl from the other side of the salon, and Salem is saying, no.
How did he get there?
He teleported. I don't know. Brandon acts like he doesn't know who Salem is and is like, can we help you? And Salem's like, you can help me by backing the fuck away from what's mine. And Brandon's like, excuse me? And steps to stand between Sage and Salem. And now things are starting to escalate. She tells Salem to please stop. And Brandon's like, oh, do you know this guy? And Salem is like, she's mine. And Sage looks at him and is like, I'm not your anything. Please leave.
Ash looks dead in my eyes when he says his following words. Pretty sure the moment your tight pussy came all over my cock, you became mine. My mouth drops open on a gasp, the same time Juniper decides to make an appearance. Looks like I got here just in time. All I'm missing is some popcorn. Good Lord. I'd be like, oh, don't say that.
It's embarrassing as fuck.
Yeah.
Once again, she tells Ash to leave, and he pulls her in close to him, saying, you mad, baby? And then Brandon's like, are you really with this guy, Sage? Ash says, yes, just as Sage is like, it's complicated. And I'm sorry for roping you into this mess. I appreciate your help today. Brandon is clearly annoyed and grabs his jacket, saying, right. Well, I hope you have fun with whatever this is. He storms out, and Juniper also takes this as her cue to exit. Sage starts laying into Salem, but he just spins her around until she's bent over the sofa.
And when I go to protest, a large hand presses down on my back, keeping me in place.
I came to see my woman and found her entertaining another man. I wasn't, shut up, Ash snaps. Then I feel his free hand undoing the button of my jeans and shoving them down over my ass, followed by the sound of his belt buckle. Now I'm going to remind you who you belong to. I gasp when the head of his cock glides through the seam of my pussy, making it clench. Fucking soaked, he growls, making my skin prickle.
Entertaining another man.
He's very rough and gruff.
Yes.
Sage is too turned on to care about what just happened, and she just wants him now. So, finally she gives in.
That's it, baby. Relax for me. You're gonna take my cock and my seed into that tight pussy and let me show you who owns it. Yes, I pant. Ash continues to tease me by rubbing the tip of his cock back and forth over my pussy. Tell me, Sage. Tell me whose pussy this is. Yours, Ash. It's yours. Now tell me what you want. A sob escapes past my lips when he pushes the tip past my entrance, then stops. I want you to fuck me, Ash. Make me yours. The second the last word leaves my mouth, Ash drives forward, burying himself inside me, and I cry out, oh God, fuck, I could live in this pussy. So goddamn good. Ash pulls out, then slams back in. So fucking good, and all mine. Isn't that right?
Oh my God.
She doesn't answer straight away, so he snatches her up by the ponytail and yanks her head back, and she says, yes, my pussy is yours. Then he starts fucking her hard and fast. She comes, he comes, he pulls out and gently puts her panties back on, telling her not to clean up. He wants her walking around all day with him inside of her. She says okay, and he tells her that she's a good girl.
After he fucks Sage, he has to meet the club to go over intel from their outside source named Ghost. The Demon Jokers have about 13 men, and their new president is the son of the old president. The guys want to know what they're going to do about it, but Salem says as long as they aren't in their town, they're not going to do shit right now. Later that day, one of the guys, Mystic, brings a snooping Demon Joker inside. They put him straight to the cellar, tie him arms up to the rafters, and unclothe him. Harlem stabs him in the knee as Baja records it on the Demon Joker's phone to send a message.
Baja?
Yeah.
Baja.
The torture continues, and then the camera pans over to Salem. He says this is their last fucking warning, and then he kills the man. He tells his men to clean up, and then he heads to the salon. He picks up Sage to bring her back to the clubhouse so he can finally show her around properly. After a while of playing poker and hanging out with the guys, Mystic comes in with a thin blonde woman who says that she's here for help. Ash doesn't want Sage in their business, so he ushers her into one of the rooms, asking her to stay put. The woman is here to ask the MC for help to kill her rapist, and his name is Jack Westgrove, and he is a judge in a couple towns over.
Damn.
The woman tries to pay them $5,000, but Salem tells her to keep the money. They'll get it done. And then when he goes to find Sage, she's not in the room that he put her in. He finds her outside with the cemetery cat Nimbus and is mad at her for not listening. She tells him that she's not his to control.
She's fucking cute, thinking she's not mine. I press my hand to her neck, tilting her head back further to keep her eyes locked on mine as I push my body into hers. I've tasted that sweet nectar between your thighs. My cock has been buried deep in that tight pussy of yours. I've claimed every inch of you, babe. When Sage breathes out, I breathe it in. You are mine. Her nectar. Her honey.
She is absolutely speechless, and he says that since her mouth isn't working and it's just open like that, he has something for it.
His dick.
She drops to her knees and pulls his dick out, giving him the best blowjob that he's ever had until he's coming down her throat. The next day, Sage is at the hardware store because apparently she likes trouble and wants to apologize to Brandon. He says it's fine, but she's making a huge mistake by being with someone like Salem. She says respectfully, that's none of his damn business, but they end the conversation as friends. As she leaves, she runs into a man outside, and as she apologizes profusely for running into him, she looks up and he is given bad vibes. He's a total creep. Brandon and Billy step in, and then a motorcycle approaches, so the man takes off. Harlem parks his bike, asking what the fuck is going on, and she tries to play it off as nothing, but Billy knows better and tells them the truth, so Harlem immediately calls Salem and tells her that Salem will be there in 5 minutes. Salem steps to the side to talk to Brandon and Billy, and then he instructs Harlem to take Sage's vehicle back to her house. She's riding with him to the club because they have shit to talk about. But once they get to the club, he has to do a quick separate meeting with a couple of the guys. So Sage is stuck with Astrid and some random stripper named Misty, who is a total bitch and fat shames her. And pretty much that says Salem's going to grow tired of her because she's fat and boring.
Okay, bitch. Okay, Misty.
Misty.
Go strip some more.
Yeah.
Go be male-centered some more. Go center your life around men some more.
Yeah.
Not a girl's girl.
No.
Sage pretty much laughs in Misty's face and starts telling her off when Salem walks in. He immediately fires Misty, but seeing his woman all riled up has his dick kind of hard. But has to wait because she now has to repeat what happened with the gentleman outside the hardware store to the rest of his men. She gives a full description of the gentleman and mentions his vest having a Demon Joker's patch on it, and Salem's heart drops. Then the sheriff comes in. There's been another murder of a woman who was found less than 1 mile from their clubhouse. Salem tells the sheriff that they didn't do anything. He gives their alibis, which placates the sheriff, and then they tell him that if they hear anything, they will let him know immediately. It's a couple days later and Salem is banging his woman.
Fuck, he rasps. That's it. My biker grabs two handfuls of my flesh and squeezes. Best goddamn ass I ever had my hands on.
My biker
grabs two handfuls of my flesh.
Yeah. She is a fatty though.
She is a fucking cow.
They both come, and later that night, she learns more info on what the club does, aka murder for hire, but it doesn't sway any of her opinions on Ash. She still wants him.
She's okay. Like, that's cool. Love that.
Yeah.
Love a man with a side hustle.
That's my man, and I ride for him.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
She also learns his family history and how he murdered his father after his father murdered his mother, and she says, it's okay.
That's normal, baby.
You're misunderstood, baby.
A couple weeks go by. She's closing up the salon while Juniper is on her very first date in years. So we're excited for Juniper about this.
Cute.
Harlem goes to help her take out the trash when they are attacked in the alleyway. Harlem manages to kill a couple of the Demon Jokers, but gets stabbed and beaten up pretty badly while they kidnap Sage. She notices one man recording everything before she's thrown into the trunk of a car. Suki watches from across the street as men drag Sage and put her into a trunk. She's frozen in fear, and once they drive away, she wonders where Harlem is since he was with her all day today. She runs across the street and finds Harlem's body in a dumpster beaten very badly. He's still alive, though, so she helps him out and he begs her to take him to the clubhouse and not the hospital. This poor woman has to load this giant biker into her vehicle. And he passes out right after he gives her directions to the clubhouse. Once she gets there, she tells Salem and the other men what she saw. Then Salem gets a text from Harlem's phone. It's a video. One part of the video is the chaos of the attack in the alleyway, and the other is of Sage being put into a stone casket inside a mausoleum and then cutting to the Demon Joker president, Warlock. He said, I have something you want. Come get it.
Okay, what the fuck?
And she's like, Daddy, I have a great feeling about this town. Good things are coming for me.
Oh, God.
Before chaos can ensue, Suki recognizes the mausoleum and knows exactly where the men have her. They suit up with weapons, and Baja has a game plan. Four men go one way. Baja and his bag of dynamite go the other towards the Demon Joker's warehouse.
Oh, my God. What is this? A Scooby-Doo movie now? What the fuck?
Once they get to the dirt road, they park the car and walk the rest of the way on foot. They kill a couple other Demon Jokers, but then Warlock catches Salem off guard right by the mausoleum. Salem tries to trade Sage's life for his own, but Warlock says no. Then Warlock shows Salem a little remote where one push of a button kills Salem's whore.
Nice whore.
That's my whore.
They have a standoff, and Salem says everything Warlock rebuilt is probably burning to the ground at this very moment, but Warlock doesn't care. He only wants revenge on Salem. Like, he rebuilt this whole MC back up just to try to kill Salem.
Oh, wow. That's a grudge.
Warlock pulls a blade out, pushing it against Salem's throat, but Salem turns, cutting himself to catch Warlock off guard, grabs the remote, shoots Warlock in the leg and the shoulder somehow. Then he pistol whips Warlock, and Mystic and Laredo push him to the mausoleum. When Sage is out of the stone casket, they place Warlock inside and Salem slits his throat. The next day, back at the clubhouse, Salem is a bottle deep in whiskey. When Sage wakes up and finds him, he breaks up with her. This part, I was like, are you fucking kidding?
Stupid.
He tells himself it's to keep her safe, and then he continues to drown in his bottle. It's 2 weeks later. Sage is still heartbroken, but even more so with the positive pregnancy.
Oh my God.
My two least favorite tropes happen in like a span of 20 pages.
Yeah, what the fuck?
She, of course, tells Juniper and texts Salem over and over saying that she has something important that she needs to talk to him about, but she gets no response. More time passes and she texts him saying it's important that they speak and she will be meeting him at the clubhouse. But when she gets there, she walks into his office and sees Astrid kneeling in front of Salem like they just finished something. She rushes out crying and Mystic stops her, asking what the hell is going on. She ominously says to tell Ash that we don't need him. Mystic goes into the room as Astrid is walking out, equally pissed at Salem for using her to hurt Sage. And then Mystic punches him in the face.
Nice.
He tells Salem Sage's message about how we don't need him. And now Salem knows that she's pregnant and he fucked up. Mystic tells him to sober up and fix his mistake. The next day, Sage wants to go home for a while and Juniper says okay, making her promise that she'll check in along the way.
Girl, take a plane.
There's not time. She's got to get out now.
She lets her parents know that she's on her way home for a while to clear her head, and then she's hitting the road. Only on her way out of town, Brandon's truck is broken down. She pulls over, asking if he needs help, and he does. So when she gets out of her car to go assist, he hits her in the head with a lead pipe and she's out cold.
What the fuck?
Daddy, I've got a great feeling about this town.
And she gets her shit rocked twice?
Yeah.
Yeah, she almost got raped the first night. She has a 40-year-old biker boyfriend now.
Yeah.
He just broke up with her when she found out she was pregnant.
After she was, like, kidnapped.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
24 hours pass, and Salem is finally sober at the salon looking for Sage so he can apologize. Juniper says that she left for her parents' house, but then her dad calls. Sage has not made it. Salem takes the phone from Juniper to talk to Charles and promises that he will find Sage. Then he heads to the club, tells them what's going on, and they all set out on their bikes to look for her. Right outside of town, they find Brandon's truck with his kill kit plus mountains of evidence and a kill log. He's the serial killer the sheriff has been looking for.
What a twist.
Dun, dun, dun. I knew something was fucking off with Brandon. I just knew it.
Yeah.
Rushing back to town, they stop at the hardware store asking Billy where the fuck Brandon is. He tells them that he's at his cabin and gives them an address. He's like, hey, man, here you go. I don't know what he did, but...
He said, I don't know where that weirdo is.
I only hired him because my sister wants him to work here. Sage wakes up to Brandon saying that she deserves this for being such a whore and leading him on. She could have been with a nice guy. Him, but no, she had to pick a shitty biker boyfriend.
Because you're a nice guy.
But it's his time for a game. He counts to 60 and she runs. When he starts counting, she doesn't hesitate and takes off, finding somewhere to hide in the forest. Meanwhile, Salem and the guys arrive at his cabin and split up when they hear Brandon calling out for Sage. Brandon finds Salem. There's a tussle. Brandon's knife finds its way into Salem's side, but ultimately Salem ends up using it to kill Brandon. And he like fully guts him.
Jesus.
As he should.
Yeah.
As he should. Mystic ends up finding Sage and they take her to the clubhouse, letting her family and friends know she's safe. Her parents are on their way to town and Ash begs for her back, but she can't trust or forgive him. We fast forward. She's a week out from having their baby when she finally forgives him and they get back together and they have their baby girl. The end.
Good Lord.
So many things happen.
Yeah, that was a very twisty-turny book. So many things did happen.
So, Riley, how many red pepper emojis do you give this one?
I thought it was good. I thought the dialogue was a bit silly, but not a lot of it. Or not most of it, but some of it, you know? I feel like 3.5. It was good, but there's just something about it. I don't know. What did you guys think?
I gave it a 3, mostly because my two least favorite tropes are back-to-back.
Yeah, don't like that. Don't like that.
But there was a lot going on, which it wasn't bad. It wasn't like hard to follow or anything. Just a lot happening.
Yeah.
I think I gave it like a 3.75. It was a very entertaining read. So many things happened. Just when you think things are coming to a close, boom.
They say, nah.
All right, so next episode, we are telling Riley all about The Long Game by Rachel Reed, and we're going to have her look at the cover and give us her best guess on what it might be about.
Okay, I know that this is a heated rivalry part 2. I feel like they're still going to, like, majority of the book, they're still going to be in secret, but I feel like their relationship's going to really evolve and it's going to be harder to keep it secret. And I feel like more people are going to find out in this book. They're going to get spotted. I don't know how, don't know who, don't know when, don't know where, but they will. And I feel like at the end of this book, The Long Game, at the end of that book, they're going to tell everyone. They're going to say, hey, this is us. We're gay.
We're here. We're queer. Get used to it.
And it's just going to be a great book, too. I already know it.
Yeah, you're basically right.
Hell yeah. Can't wait to read it. Well, I can't wait to hear about it.
With lots of weenie rubbing. Rubbing weenies.
I love a good weenie rub.
Ooh, and they were boys.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this episode. And don't forget to check out patreon.com/smutupandlisten to hear the r/smut podcast, where Riley and I do blind reactions to Reddit erotica every Tuesday.
Yeah, do it.
Please check us out on Instagram @smutupandlistenpodcast.
Tell your friends, but not your mom. And we'll see you later, you horny little rats.
Bye.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21+. Terms and conditions apply.